So depression, as Phillips is saying, it's topical, it's in the news a lot. There are often articles in newspapers, interviews with people who have experienced depression, and there are lots of television programs about it, and so it seems to be on the increase, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but it's just worth at this point highlighting the fact that depression is something that has afflicted people for centuries. It's not a new thing. It might be diagnosed in the same way, but some historical figures from the last 150 years include Abraham Lincoln, who suffered from bouts of depression throughout his life. He said he had a tendency to melancholy, and that was a misfortune, not anybody's fault. Winston Churchill suffered from bouts of depression, and he referred to his depression as his black dog. Gerald Manley Hopkins, William Cowper, and Christina Rossetti are all poets or hymn writers from the 1800s who suffered from quite severe depression at various stages in their life. Then we'd all be more familiar with modern media celebrities. Stephen Fry has suffered from depression, and particularly its bipolar form. Sinead O'Connor also from bouts of depression mixed with abuse of alcohol and drugs, but she has suffered from depression. And Carrie Fisher, who died earlier this year, had bipolar. And Alistair Campbell, Tony Blair's he has also talked about his depression. And in the Bible, there are references to symptoms of depression. While we can't say that characters in the Bible couldn't diagnose them as having a depressive disorder, nonetheless, there are lots of references in the writings of the Bible. Certainly Elijah and Jonah wished to die at certain points in their lives, and the Apostle Paul almost felt like giving up because of the trials he'd been facing, and he mentions in one of his letters to the church at Corinth and how he almost despaired of life. So although we can't say that those Bible characters have depressive illness, we can certainly know that they experience bouts of depression. So it's been around a long time. Depression is the biggest single cause of ill health and disability globally. And the numbers suffering from it have increased by 18% in the last decade, according to the World Health Organization, now reaching 300 million people worldwide suffering from depressive illnesses. And we're all aware that suicide rates are rising. We hear about that in Ireland and in the UK as well. Rising suicide rates, particularly in the last 20 years. And approximately 1 in 10 people will experience one episode of depression during the course of their life, at least one episode. So it's very common. Now, why is it increasing, we may ask? Well, a psychologist called Oliver James wrote a book called Affluenza. And he suggests one possible factor. He talked about an epidemic sweeping through the English-speaking world, and obsessive envy is keeping up with the Joneses, that makes us twice as prone to depression, anxiety, and addictions than people in other developed nations, and now we are affecting the rest of the world. So he puts it down to this competitiveness, this trying to prosper economically and beat each other into second place. So he, in other words, he puts it down to the fast pace of life, and we might ask, well, is the pace of life faster now than it was in the past? And I think, well, we can't know for sure, but it certainly does seem like it, that there's less time to relax. And 100 years ago, a man called William Davies wrote a poem called "What Is This Life If Full of Care? We Have No Time to Stand and Stare." So he was noticing the same in 1911, that people were too busy, that they didn't have time to relax. And if he was noticing it in 1911, you can be sure that 100 years later that is a big issue in our lives that is probably contributing to the rise of the rates of depression. The other thing that Oliver James was referring to was this competitiveness, and if you try hard enough, you can achieve your dream, the American dream. Oh, if you just try, you can make it. And that competitiveness is what Oliver James was referring to. And it all leads to a breakdown in relationships, because people are spending so much time getting up in the world, getting on in the world, relationships suffer, and so there is definitely a rise in family breakdown, and that contributes to the rise in depression. And loneliness, the number of people who say they are lonely, particularly middle-aged and older people, there's a rise in people describing how loneliness affects them. Anomie is a French word that was coined by a researcher called Henri Durkheim about 100 years ago. What means by is this breakdown in society, breakdown in community. And there's no closeness. People aren't as close together in communities as they used to be. And he related rising suicide rates to anomie, to loss of community and loss of close relationships, supportive relationships. And that is certainly a factor to the economic factor as well. Poverty does contribute, but you can't say that poverty is a cause, because there's always been poverty even in the period of slavery in America. There wasn't a particular rise in depression because of that poverty, but poverty is a contributing factor, not necessarily a straight link to causing it. Okay, then another factor, Time magazine reported earlier this year on the effect of social media, Facebook and Twitter and all these, Instagram, and they talked about, particularly for young people, the cauldron of stimulus and the effects of the cauldron of stimulus. So many stimuli are being bombarded, young people are being bombarded with information overload. And young people in particular, but a lot of adults as well, are increasingly always on their smartphones. And you can't get away from your problems. There's this hyper-connectedness. Young people in the same room as their parents, in the presence of their parents, but they're on their smartphones, they are engaged in some dialogue with friends, perhaps friends from their school, but it could be friends from the other side of the world that they've met on Facebook. So they're just constantly bombarded with information and stress. And Time magazine, they say that this is contributing to the rise of anxiety and depression in young people. And I think today on the news, one of the co-founders of Facebook was reported as saying, "I don't know what we're doing to young people." He left Facebook, but he he was saying, and I don't know what we're doing, young people are so much bombarding their brains with so much information. And certainly, this cauldron of stimuli or stimulus is what would contribute to anxiety and depression. So, okay. What is it?
Low mood with loss of interest in and enjoyment of usually enjoyed activities. So, loss of interest in things that you previously enjoyed, or enjoyment of those things. Loss of energy, loss of concentration, slowed up thinking, it takes you longer to work things out. Ideas of guilt and unworthiness are part of it. A bleak view of the future, a sort of sense of loss of hope. Disturbed sleep and disturbance of appetite usually go with it. Either increased appetite, eating too much, or loss of appetite, and with loss of appetite, losing weight. And when symptoms are pervasive and persist for over 2 weeks, that's all, if these symptoms persist for over 2 weeks, constantly present for 2 weeks, then you have a depressive disorder. Now, in more severe cases, in more severe cases, there may be associated anxiety and agitation, okay, like this neglect of personal care, clothes, and just not washing, couldn't be bothered washing because you're too depressed to do it. And the feelings of life not worth living, obviously then suicidal ideas and attempts are more a feature of more severe depression. And then I need to mention to the bipolar disorder, where you get periods of depression, which we've already described, alternating with periods of elevated mood, elated moods, thoughts racing fast instead of the opposite, where your thoughts are slowed in depression. Their thoughts racing fast, fast speech, and disinhibited irritable behaviours. And delusions, thinking grandiose delusions, mean people who think they could fly and maybe jump out of heights because they think they can fly. And paranoid delusions, people thinking there are people against them, would be more associated with the high swings of bipolar disorder. And the treatment is different from what's known as unipolar depression, where you just get depressed. So how do people describe it? Well, these are quotes from people who suffered from depression. So, periods of feeling dark and empty when darkness descends. Someone else has described it as like being submerged in cold, black water. Winston Churchill described it as his black dog that was his companion. Other people say that it feels like your internal world is falling apart. And people who have faith, religious faith, often describe the feeling that God is absent, uninterested, or even non-existent if they have previously believed in him. What are the causes of depression? Well, people who experience depression, we all have vulnerabilities, and then we all have things that stress us. If we're more vulnerable, to the right there, it takes less stress to tip us into illness. The upper triangle is illness. The lower triangle is healthy well-being. The line is the threshold. And the more vulnerable we are, the less stress it takes to tip us into illness, whereas someone here is less vulnerable, might still become depressed, but it would take a lot more stress to tip them into depression. So let's think about some of the vulnerabilities and stresses. What about stresses, first of all? Well, loss in general, any kind of loss in life, is likely to be a trigger. A possible trigger for depression. So bereavement, losing somebody close to you, a close family member, loss of health, either sudden loss of health, either through an accident or just sudden illness, or chronic depression, chronic health loss, either can contribute to depression. Loss of employment, sudden loss of employment, and the loss of the sense of worth that employment brings and the role that it gives you. Relationship breakdown, so loss of relationships can be a trigger for depression. Business failures, things going pear-shaped in business or in work. It doesn't say it there, I mentioned it elsewhere, bullying, being bullied at work, or in the case of kids, being bullied at school. All of these things are stressors, and I've mentioned at the end, moral crises, people feeling a sense of loss of worth because of something they've done, something they feel they've done, which they feel guilty about, but they are in fact truly, truly guilty, truly morally guilty. So it's some sort of moral crisis. I'll come to that. So these are stressful life events. Okay. Vulnerabilities. First of all, there's biological, psychological, social, and spiritual vulnerabilities. So biological, some of us are more prone to depression because of what we inherit from our families, our genes. There definitely is an association with depression in some, it runs in some families, but that doesn't mean that if you know history of it in your family, you'll not be free from depression. Anybody can get depression, but it's just the more, if you have a history of it in your family, you're going to be more vulnerable. Temperament, your temperament or your personality will make you more vulnerable as well. To some extent, this is also hereditary, but we all have different temperaments, and I put down here the Eeyore stroke Tigger as examples in the Winnie the Pooh stories. There's Eeyore, who's always gloomy, the donkey, who's always gloomy, and Tigger, who's always bouncy, and these hint at our sort of child's version of personality differences. So people who are more perhaps introvert and gloomy, like Eeyore, are maybe more vulnerable to depression. Then chemical imbalances can make us more vulnerable to depression, and certainly chemical imbalances are evident in depressive illnesses. Whether they're caused by the illness or whether they cause the illness, there's a bit of both. So that's why I put down there cause or consequence. Well, I think it is true that their chemical imbalances are present in depression. They may or may not contribute to the depression happening in the first place. And then physical illness. So if you have long-term physical illness, that can make you more vulnerable to depression. So what are the psychological vulnerabilities? So if you're bereaved of a parent as a child before the age of 7, there was a series of studies done 30 years ago which showed if there wasn't a compensatory parent role, somebody didn't substitute parent, if you lost a parent and nobody was there to act as an uncle or substitute for the loss, and then you were more going to be more vulnerable to depression in adult life. So it's not as straightforward as losing a parent, but it's the whether or not there's a compensatory person who takes over an uncle role, who could, or an auntie role, who, or a grandparent who can compensate for the loss of the parent. Other childhood experiences can make us vulnerable. So that's what I would call it, dysfunctional families. That's whenever there's maybe parents who only, for example, only value the child for what they will achieve. they don't value the child just for what he or she is, and so they're always putting pressure on the child to succeed and to succeed in certain ways. And when they don't, then the parent communicates a sense of disappointment, constant disappointment with the child. So if the child is growing up with that sense, it affects their sense of well-being, of worth, and they're more likely to be vulnerable to depression in adult life. I miss out insecure attachment. Temperament. Again, that's a bit related to what I was talking about earlier about Eeyore and Tigger. But I specifically mention here, there are some people who have a very tender conscience and feel very easily hurt. They're easily hurt, and they also feel they're more likely to feel they're letting people down when they're not really letting them down. So I refer to this as a temperamental factor, but it's they've got a tender conscience. I mentioned low self-esteem in connection with childhood experiences, but also abuse in childhood, physical abuse or sexual abuse, can lead to vulnerability to depression in adult life, and traumatic experiences like violence, exposure to domestic violence, can be traumatic for children and also make them vulnerable too. So that's a number of possible psychological vulnerabilities. Social vulnerabilities, well, again, there's certain overlap between social and psychological, but I mentioned trauma and poverty, adverse life circumstances, and I've already mentioned the pressure to achieve or perform, working too hard, and you just burn out. So people who experience burnout are much more likely to get depressed, burnout due to overwork. Unemployment, especially if you have been employed and suddenly lose that employment, that makes you more vulnerable to it. And the quality of current relationships. So if you don't have, this is related to the loneliness thing. So people who are lonely and don't have warm, supportive relationships, like that man, the Filipino man mentioned about his family and how they rallied around him and supported him through his depression, that would also be a protective factor against depression. So quality of relationships, of current relationships, makes a big difference to preventing depression. Bullying makes you more vulnerable. So spiritual, I referred to moral crises and moral guilt. And I think that Siobhan O'Connor, when she said a few years ago in a newspaper interview, "I've done so many bad things, it hurts," she's referring to the moral guilt that makes her vulnerable to depression. And she knew that these are bad things that she has done. She knew that she was morally guilty for these things. Jesus, when he was here on earth, is recorded in St. Mark's Gospel, is talking about how it's what comes out of us that makes us unclean. It's our deceitful hearts, our greed, our malice, slander, our envy, our arrogance and folly. This is all the stuff that leads us to moral failure. And the Apostle Paul, also, even though he'd been a man of faith for many years, he says at one point in his life, "For what I want to do, I do not do, but what I hate, I do." So again, he's getting at the struggle with evil in his own life. He's admitting that he does things that he doesn't want to do, and what he wants to do, he doesn't do. So there's constantly, for all of us, a struggle with a battle with our deceitful hearts that Jesus talked about. And then another spiritual vulnerability, we might say, is an existential crisis. In other words, people who suddenly, maybe they've never really thought about it, but suddenly in life they suddenly begin to think, why are we here? What are we living for? What's the point of life? Maybe they've been going along successfully and something goes wrong, and then they suddenly start to think, why am I here? And this existential crisis can cause depression occasionally. And it's interesting, just in that it's a bit of an aside, this, but Sigmund Freud, who didn't in any way follow what he preached, but he says here, only religion can answer the question of the purpose of life. One can hardly be wrong in concluding the idea of life having a purpose stands or falls with the religious system. So despite saying that, Freud didn't in any way follow any religious system, had no faith, but he still recognized that having a purpose in life was closely related to religious faith, religious belief. And there's a study in 2012, the Oxford Handbook on Religion and Health is a big book of studies into mental health and religion. And of 45 studies into meaning and purpose, 42 found that religion was associated with an increased sense of meaning and purpose. Now that, of course, having that religious faith doesn't protect you from depression. There are lots of people of faith who suffer from depression because they've got other vulnerabilities, but it does make a difference to many people to have a sense of purpose in life. Okay, so now I'm going to run through some of the treatments that are available. Right, divide them into biological, psychological, and social. So biological treatments. Well, you might not think that your diet matters, but a good healthy diet is important in recovering from depression, but also exercise. There's a lot of evidence now that exercise, walking, just walking for half an hour every day, actually helps to lift depression. It may take effort, it may take quite a bit of effort to get out, but if you do that, half an hour of walking a day in mild to moderate depression will lead to improvement in mood. Then biological treatments also includes medications, so antidepressants and sedatives for sleep. I'll not go into the details of those, but they do have a role, very much so, but they've got to be aware there are side effects, and particularly with sedatives, the risk of physical dependence. Sedatives might be used to help with broken sleep. I mentioned the fact that depressed people have trouble with sleep, and short-term use of a sedative might help to restore a sleep pattern. Antidepressants. I would have always said that antidepressants are valuable in that they help you to get to the point where you can use talking therapies. So some people are too depressed to be able to make use of talking treatments. And the value of an antidepressant in that situation is it lifts the mood, and then you can start to engage in talking treatment. And so I would feel it's important always to combine antidepressants with a talking treatment, not to purely just depend on antidepressants alone. It's very important that there is some kind of talking treatment alongside antidepressants. Otherwise, there's a greater risk of relapse. And I mentioned there just briefly at the end, finally, for very severe depression and very rarely used nowadays, but in those rare cases, and I've got personal friends who have had ECT and it has been life-saving for them. It is overused in the past and got a lot of bad publicity. It is much, much more sparingly used nowadays and much, much more carefully administered, and in extremely severe cases, it is life-saving. Where I'm going the wrong way. Okay, so psychological treatments, this is where I'm talking about talking treatments. Counseling, that's not, psychotherapy is the jargon, but counseling is a bit more accessible. Working through your problems with the help of a therapist or a counselor. The most well-known nowadays talking therapy is cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. And I'll make some reference to what that involves in a minute, but it involves addressing your cognitions or your thoughts. That's Latin for thoughts, your cognitions, and your behavior. So doing things to change your behavior that the depression has affected both your thoughts and your behavior. You can also, nowadays, you can also do some of these things online on the web. This Mood Gym is an Australian produced cognitive behavioral therapy course. It's not particularly helpful, but it does help some people understand what's involved in cognitive behavior therapy. Then there are other therapies that are a bit more obscure, but psychodynamic or family therapy or relationship therapy in general, or art therapy can be helpful in helping people uncover perhaps causes of their depression that they've been less aware of. So that some therapies go a little bit deeper and explore things that have been happening perhaps in the person's life that they've suppressed, okay, or hidden. And that kind of therapy can be helpful as well. Uncover causes of which the sufferer is not aware. Now, okay. CBT then really says that you don't have to be controlled by our emotions or our thoughts. And it encourages to put our thoughts in the witness stand and say, is that thought really true? What's the evidence for that thought? You think, we tend to, when we get depressed, we tend to generalize and say, I'm useless, I'm hopeless, everything goes wrong, everything I do goes wrong, those generalized thoughts. Whereas CBT encourages you to challenge those negative thoughts, put them in the witness stand. What's the evidence for that? Is there any evidence that if you'd done something different, or, you know, that idea that there's a barrister cross-examining your thoughts is a good way to think of what cognitive therapy is all about. The behavior bit is make small achievable goals. People who are depressed don't feel like doing things. They don't feel the energy, or it's too much effort to get up early or make your breakfast, or it's too hard to do those things. So their behavior becomes more withdrawn and more slowed up. And the behavior bit of cognitive behavior therapy is to set small achievable goals, solve one problem at a time, make yourself do one small thing. And I used to talk about an expression that comes from years ago when cars used to be said a car was only going on three cylinders, and it's kind of chugged along, but it's still worth doing something even if you're only firing on three cylinders, okay? When you're depressed, you feel like you're not firing on all cylinders. So you make yourself do it even if you don't feel it's as good as you would like it to be. So that's the behavior bit. Change your behavior. Establish a routine. That's important as well. Have a daily routine. Get up at a certain time. Make it realistic, try and establish that routine and make it. Stay in touch with people. Again, that video that you showed, that the importance of his relationships, his family. But even if you don't have family around you, stay in touch with friends. Even if you don't feel like seeing them, that's an important part of recovering from depression. Make social contact. Even if it's only once a week, as little as that, just make contact with a friend and talk it over. Again, the video talked about talking to people about how you feel. And that's what we're always being told if you're depressed, particularly men, they're always telling men to go and talk to somebody. So talking it over is an important part of recovery. Make yourself also do some activity. Now, not everybody's into these things, but whatever you're into, whatever your hobby is that you previously enjoyed and you're not enjoying anymore, well, just make yourself do a little bit of it. You know, any of these things. Playing the guitar or whatever, or painting or whatever. You've lost interest in it with the depression, but try and make yourself do just a little bit of it to reverse the pattern of the depression. That's all part of cognitive behavior therapy. So what also helps, particularly for Christian believers, is the recognition that Jesus Christ has experienced everything that we experience in life. In the book of Hebrews, it says, we don't have a high priest who's unable to sympathize with us in our sufferings, in our weaknesses, but someone who has suffered in every way like we have. So we know that Christian believers know that they can talk to Jesus, to pray, and that they're praying. When they pray, they're talking to someone who understands. When he was here on earth, Jesus suffered in every way like we do. And the Irish Catholic mystic John O'Donoghue put it very well when he said, God has been willing to come down into the clay and mud and take the full hit of human fragility. And he became man. He took the full hit of human fragility. And because of that, we can be sure that he understands when we feel depressed. We talk to him, he understands. And the Bible, we can pray and we can talk to God about our frustrations. The Psalms are full of people who rail against God for why these things are happening to them. And they're not condemned for their anger, for their expressing their frustration with God. Why is this happening to me? The Psalms and Job are full of that expression. And we should not be afraid to express our anger and our frustration to God when we pray. It's not a matter of just asking God to help us, but express our frustration. That is what the psalmists do, and Job does as well. The psalmist also, in particularly those two Psalms, 42 and 43, does a bit of cognitive behavioral therapy. He says to himself, why are you cast down? Why are you low? Why are you low, my soul? Why should you be discouraged? He's doing a bit of that challenging of his thoughts in those Psalms. If you read them, the psalmist says, why are you low? Why are you cast down? Why should you be discouraged? He's challenging those negative thoughts that have made him feel depressed. And then there's another psalm where I refer to the fact that God is like the eternal counselor, the eternal psychotherapist, because it says, search me, O God, and see if there's any offensive way in me, and lead me in the eternal way. So we can talk to God knowing that he is like a counselor as well. We can also meditate on scripture, on Christian poetry or hymns as well. These can be helpful in helping us to recover, particularly poetry and hymns. Now, let's see. Yeah. Giles Fraser, who writes for the Guardian newspaper, is a Church of England minister, clergyman in London, but he spoke very movingly of his experience of depression on A Thought for the Day on radio at the beginning of this year. And he said faith for him is often the determination to sit in the darkness without cheap consolation and wait it out for the dawn to break. That's articulated also in one of the Psalms, "My soul waits for the Lord more than watchmen for the watch for the morning." Waiting, just waiting. I mean, think of Abraham Lincoln. Whenever he experienced bouts of depression, now I'm not saying it's not clear where his faith was, but he just had to wait it out. There was no antidepressants in his day. He had to wait it out. And that's what Giles Fraser is talking about here. Move on here. Okay, so what about help from friends and family? Well, the Filipino guy expressed very clearly, and his family expressed very clearly, the value of support of his family. So the compassion of his family around him and compassion of friends, and the Bible also refers to the compassion of God. God is a compassionate God, slow to anger, rich in mercy. That is who we can turn to. And in Psalm 147, he's referred to as binding up the wounds of the brokenhearted. God binds up the wounds of the brokenhearted. And so that's the compassion of God, and we can share that compassion with our friends. We need to be sensitive to their need, non-judgmental. Empathetic it just means that we really feel with the person what they're feeling. Weep. The Bible talks about weeping with those who weep. It's important to be able to weep with those who weep, or just sit in silence with them and persevere in listening. Okay. For people with suicidal thoughts, it's important to try and instill hope. We can say something like, "Many people who have been in similar situations, feeling hopeless, wishing they were dead, have discovered that there is hope, and their feelings have improved with time." So we try then to help the person identify reasons to stay alive. Perhaps there's somebody in their life who would miss them. We can help them to search together for solutions to their problems and get alongside them and mobilize carers, friends, or other trusted individuals to support them and monitor their suicidal thoughts. Okay, what's the role of the church? Well, Jesus said that he'd been sent to bind up the brokenhearted. He was referring, when he used those words, to a prophecy that was given by a prophet Isaiah many hundreds of years beforehand. But he said that is what he was sent to do, to bind up the brokenhearted, comfort all who mourn. And that is part of the function of the church. If we follow Jesus Christ, we are involved in that mission of Christ's. So befriending, mentoring, and being a substitute family, perhaps for someone whose family has been abusive, whose family has hurt them in whatever way, then a church family should be a community, a family that can support them and enable them to get through the hard times. It should be a place, church should be a place of honesty, where people can allow guilty feelings into consciousness and share it with people without feeling that they're going to be judged. So a place of honesty. Yes, I missed that one. A church should be a place where people can fail safely without being written off or judged because they've failed. And the top quote is actually one of Siobhan O'Connor's songs. She has a song called "Take Me to Church." And but she says, "But not the ones that hurt." And obviously she's referring to churches where people get abused physically and sexually. But all churches can fail that way. Some churches, even if there isn't emotional or physical or sexual abuse, can be controlling. And this is why I say a church should be a place where people can fail safely and be built up and supported through depression and hard times. And to back this up, this Oxford Handbook on Religion and Health looked at many, many professional studies into the difference that religious practice made. And on average, there were lower levels of depression in people who had a church affiliation. 28, 9 or 40 studies showed this quite clearly, and hope was the key factor. The churches, the support of the churches brought hope to the people that are depressed. People also recover faster from bereavement, according to this research. There's lower levels of alcohol and drug abuse, and a lower risk of suicide in people who have association with churches. It doesn't mean that it doesn't happen in churches, but there's a lower risk on average. And it's interesting then in that respect that the Social Integration Commission in the UK, it's a sort of government quangle, but they did a review of the things that led to more community, more social integration, and they said, with no religious axe to grind, churches and other places of worship are more successful than any other social setting at bringing people of different backgrounds together, well ahead of gatherings such as parties, meetings, weddings, or venues such as pubs and clubs. So, finally then, we're nearly finished here. What helps us to be more resilient and to maybe prevent depression recurring again? So, well, first of all, I think it's important to... Sometimes people are hit with depression. They never thought they would be depressed in their lives. They were getting along fine. There's no history of depression in their families. And then suddenly something happens that takes away some kind of support. They lose something or lose someone, and they are hit with depression. It's important to begin to orientate ourselves to the fact that life is hard. As that Filipino guy said, life is beautiful, but it's beautifully complicated. That's what he said at the beginning. I'm sorry the sound wasn't clear, but it was one of the things he said that I was particularly struck by. Life is hard, it's beautiful, but it's beautifully complicated. And we need to accept that there will be hard knocks in life. And accepting that is one of the first steps towards developing resilience. So pay attention to the emotions, but resist negative thoughts. That's, again, the cognitive things of cognitive behavioural therapy. Have good social supports around you. So try and develop relationships to prevent that loneliness that might creep up on you, particularly in later life. Make sure you've got good relationships. Look after your body, health, have good leisure time, have hobbies and interests, and spiritual needs. Pay attention to your spiritual needs as well, because we all do have. Jesus said we should seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things that you need in life will be added if we seek first the kingdom of God. Almost finished now. Yeah. A lot of the therapies that we get are all about helping ourselves, and while that's good, it's important to help ourselves, but sometimes we need to find help from outside. Obviously talking to a counsellor is help from outside, but even if we don't have a counsellor, we can find support from God and his promises for transformation. We talk about being human beings, but we're really, I would like to think of us as human becomings. And through all these hard knocks, we can grow as people. Again, that Filipino guy referred to the embracing depression, and we can become stronger people and make a contribution to society. We're human becomings. But for all of us, if we want to get help from our from outside ourselves, we will find help from Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit, which gives power to change. And that's true for believers, but it's also true if you don't have any faith in the first instance. The Holy Spirit will revive your soul if you can trust in Jesus Christ.